The book of Proverbs can be divided into two portions. Chapters 1 through 9 are the call of wisdom. Solomon is alerting his son to two women that he will meet along life's path. The first is the sinful, slick, sensual woman, the immoral woman, the loose lady, who will try to entice him through her flatteries, by her figure, through her flirtations. She will lure him with the promise of pleasure, but her bite is poisonous and lethal. We've seen her as she's tried to entice the young man. But there's another woman who cries out and who beckons the young man to turn into her house. And that's Lady Wisdom. And in an allegorical way, Solomon portrays wisdom as a woman who is also enticing and who also is wooing the young man to follow her. But she does so by telling him the truth, not by flattering him, but by being honest, by shooting straight. It's the smart man who turns into the house of wisdom and who makes his bed with wisdom and who adopts and applies the wisdom of God to his life. The second portion of the book begins in chapter 10, where we find the young man enrolled in the College of Wisdom. And his curriculum are these short, pithy, little pointed but profound proverbs. These little concentrations of truth, capsules of wisdom. This is what a proverb is. It's a short sentence based on long experience. And Solomon takes these different proverbs and through these little nuggets of truth, he communicates wisdom to his son. Now, whenever you seek to crack open a proverb and understand it, it's best to take proverbs in small doses. They're like these tiny time capsules that you swallow and then they sort of unleash their wisdom over a period of time. You really need to chew on them before they can permeate your life and before you can absorb them and really apply them to your life. You need to take the Proverbs one by one, day by day, to really get the most out of them. Having said that, tonight we're going to tackle several chapters of Proverbs. We're going to sort of turn the bottle upside down and swallow a mouthful of Proverbs, and probably by the time you've left tonight, you'll feel like you've overdosed on wisdom. But remember, our purpose is not to scuba dive into Scripture. We're skiing. This is a survey. And I hope that tonight, as we sort of survey several chapters of these Proverbs, that it will whet your appetite. And it will encourage you to go back and to dig deeper into these profound truths. The Proverbs of Solomon, and here he begins. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother. It's amazing, when a child is successful, it seems like the father is the one who is quick to boast. He's quick to be proud of his son, while the mother seems to sort of remain quietly satisfied and content with the success of her son. Whereas on the other hand, when a son is a fool and proves to be a fool, it's the mother who sort of outwardly grieves over her son, and it's the father who sort of takes it with stone silence. Now, why that is, I don't know. But it should provide for each of us a motivation to make our parents proud, to seek to be a source of blessing to our parents rather than a source of grief. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. In other words, I have never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing. You can't take them with you. They're of no eternal value. Lay up for yourself all sorts of treasures and all sorts of riches, and you're simply leaving them for someone else to enjoy. You can't take it with you. John D. Rockefeller was probably the wealthiest man who has ever lived. And yet after his death, his accountant was asked, "Hey, what did John D. leave behind?" His accountant, without hesitation, said, "He left everything behind." You don't take it with you. You know, it's vain to store up treasure on earth. I'm trying to send my treasures on ahead by pursuing spiritual goals and spiritual ambitions. I'm laying up for myself treasure in heaven, not treasure on earth. Money can buy a lot of things in this world, but it can't buy the things that really matter and that are really important. And when you die, God will not look at your ledger sheet here on earth. What's going to count is the ledger sheet in heaven. Whether your debt has been canceled by the blood of Jesus Christ, whether the righteousness of Christ has been credited to your assets, that's what's going to count in heaven. The Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish, but He casts away the desire of the wicked. He who deals with a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes one rich. The slack hand, of course, is the slothful hand. It's the lazy hand. They say that one of the keys to success is being at the right place at the right time. And I agree. But it is the diligent man. It is the determined man. It is the hard worker who happens to be there when the opportunities arise. It's amazing, the lazy man, you know, he's never at the right place at the right time because he's too lazy. He's sitting back on his duff and he's never there. It's the hard worker that's there when the opportunities arise. There is no shortcut to success. You know, these get-rich-quick schemes, be careful of them. They're usually a scam. It is the hard worker who becomes the success. The reason a lot of people do not recognize an opportunity when they meet it is that it usually goes around wearing overalls and looking like hard work. I heard of the great golfer, Gary Player. He made this comment: "The harder you work, the luckier you get." It's hard work that puts you at the right place at the right time. He who gathers in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. Understand that there are some jobs that are seasonal. The opportunities are not there all the time, and you've got to take advantage of them while they're there. Wives, if your husband is working in a job that is seasonal, you need to understand. You need to be sensitive to that. There are going to be times when you're going to have to make sacrifices. You won't see him for a while, but then there will be other times when you'll see him more than you want to see him. So in the end, it all kind of balances out. It's interesting, but the ministry is like that, I've discovered over the years, that it's seasonal. I mean, there are times when we're got a special project going on, the Lord's doing something, we're planning for an outreach or something, and man, you're just working like crazy. And then there are other times when things sort of slack off and it gets back to normal. So be sensitive. A lot of jobs that are seasonal, a lot of ministries that are seasonal. And you make a sacrifice for a short period of time, and then things sort of adjust and get back to normal. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. The wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. The word prating literally means idle chatter. And we all know people who are always talking and who never listen. Never forget, God gave you two ears and one mouth because He wanted you to do twice the listening that you do talking. He says, he who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known. He who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. You know, the man who winks, you never know what he thinks. I mean, if I tell you something and then I kind of wink, you know, you never know whether I meant it or not, you know. You run into these people who always have sort of a double meaning to what they say. You can't really tell whether they're shooting straight. Be careful of that kind of person. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. Sin splits. Sin severs. Sin gets in and it destroys harmony and unity. Sin divides churches. Sin divides marriages and causes marriages to crumble. And yet, the protection is love. For you see, where there is love, the sin can be forgiven. Two people can start afresh. They can start over. Every relationship between two sinners, and that means every relationship on earth, will have strife. You're going to go through tough times. If you're married, you're going to go through tough times. You're in a church, you're going to go through some times where you're going to hurt somebody's feelings or somebody's going to hurt your feelings. And yet it's the love that God has given to us that enables us to get over the strife and the hurts. It's the love that cements us together. We need to be careful that we never allow the sin to strangle our love. Remember what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. He said, love bears all things. It believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. There have been times when my wife and I have been at each other's throat. But we hang in there because we love each other. And love never fails. You just keep loving, and loving just sort of soothes things and forgives things and keeps things going and keeps things together. Wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding, but a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. Wise people store up knowledge. They study the Word. They read the Scriptures. They apply it to their lives. They memorize it. But the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. Now, there's no virtue in and of itself of being rich. And yet, riches do provide a certain amount of security. You know, if you don't have to worry about your daily bread, I mean, if you're always having to worry about where the next meal's coming from, it's hard to focus in on other pursuits. When you're having a hard time wondering how to fill your stomach, you have a hard time focusing on your heart. And so poverty becomes a preoccupation. And people are so worried about eating that they can't pursue the spiritual things of life, the real meaningful things of life. Whereas a man who is rich, who has enough to meet his needs, that should set him free to be able to pursue spiritual things, to be able to go out and to serve the Lord. Now, this is why God gives riches, why He blesses us financially, so that we don't have to worry about the basic needs and so that we can focus in on Him. So rich man's wealth is his strong city. The labor of the righteous leads to life, the wages of the wicked to sin. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he who refuses reproof goes astray. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. But he who restrains his lips is wise. Plato said, wise men talk because they have something to say. Fools, because they have to say something. Listen to the little poem. You've probably heard it before. A wise old owl sat in an oak. The more he saw, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Let's try to imitate this wise old bird. Learn to keep your mouth shut. Especially in marriage, what's the little jingle? It was written by Ogden Nash. To keep your marriage brimming with love in the loving cup, whenever you're wrong, admit it. Whenever you're right, shut up. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of wisdom. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. One of the things that I've noticed about sin is that sin is the great complicator. The wages of sin weave a tangled web. Sin messes up your life. It just entangles things. It just creates a mess. And you try to get your way out, find your way out of it, and it's like a maze. One thing leads to another and another and another. You lie to get out of one thing, then you lie to get out of a lie you just told, and then on and on and on. It's terrible. Sin leaves behind it a residue of sorrow. The pleasures of sin leave behind the hangover, the lingering pain. And yet God's blessings are just the opposite. God's blessings are neat because they leave behind no harmful residue. God's pleasures don't carry with them a hangover. You know, when God blesses, it's a pure thing. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, you receive God's blessing and there's no harmful byproducts. It's unhindered happiness when God blesses. There's no sorrow with His blessings. To do evil is like sport to a fool, but a man of understanding has wisdom. The fear of the wicked will come upon him, and the desire of the righteous will be granted. When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. The lazy man becomes an irritation to the man who hires him. Colossians chapter 3, verse 17, we're told, "And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him." The Christian should be the most effective and the hardest worker in his office or on his job. For you see, the Christian is not just working for a paycheck. He's just not just working for that company. But he realizes that in everything he does, he is praising God. In everything he does, he is taking that thing and transforming it into an act of worship and praise. He has a motivation to work that goes far beyond the money he might earn. He is anything but an irritation to his boss. The fear of the Lord prolongs days, and the years of the wicked will be shortened. The hope of the righteous will be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked will perish. Now understand that the wicked man has a positive attitude. And in this day and age, it seems that a positive mental attitude is valued above everything else. But a positive attitude is not always to be admired. Here he has a positive attitude, but he perishes. I mean, there are a lot of people that ought not to be positive. If there's sin in their life, it's time to be a little negative. It's time to realize that they've sinned, that they've fallen short of God's glory, that they need to repent and turn to God. In Christ, we can be positive. In and of ourselves, we're pretty negative. He says, "The way of the Lord is strength for the upright, but destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not inhabit the earth." And here the proverb becomes prophetic and really looks to the day when Jesus Christ returns and establishes His kingdom. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut out. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. The just weight literally means a perfect stone. In ancient times, commercial dealings were done according to the weight of what was being sold. A certain measure was weighed out on one side, and it purchased a certain measure on the other side. And so an accurate scale was proof of an honest man. The man who, you know, weighted the scale and adjusted the scale to cheat his customer. You know, this is what he's talking about here. Now, today we live in a sophisticated society, and we have a very sophisticated marketplace, and we no longer do business, you know, with the scale sitting there. But there's still plenty of ways to adjust the scale in order to cheat your customer. God doesn't approve of that. He wants us to be honest with our business dealings. You know, it's interesting. God goes into business. You say, well, where does God go into business? God goes into business. But whenever He goes into business, He always goes in as a partner. He will go in with you in your business and in your work. He will be a partner in that business if you will conduct yourself in a way that will please Him. If you'll be a witness for Him. If you'll do things honestly and justly. Provide an honest service at an honest price. God will, He'll be a partner with you. He'll bless your business. But it's an abomination to Him to see somebody sort of cheating. You know, fudging here, fudging there to get that extra buck. When pride comes, I hate it whenever I go to a fast food store and they fill my cup up halfway. Or you go in and order a large fry and you get a small fry and a large fry box. You know, that's a modern day parallel. You know, you need to have a just weight, you know. When pride comes, then comes shame. But with the humble is wisdom. The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. It's interesting that decisions are not really hard for the man who walks in integrity. It's the man who lacks character that's often caught between a rock and a hard place. The man of integrity, the man committed to integrity and to uprightness, decisions are very easy for him. He says, the riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Now, one of the things that we notice about the Proverbs is that we can take each proverb and we can find that proverb illustrated in the life of one of the characters of the Bible. Another fun thing to do with the Proverbs is to take each proverb and think about your own life. For there's probably a person that you know that illustrates that proverb. Now, you might not want to tell them that they illustrate that particular proverb. They might punch you in the mouth. But you can find people in your life that illustrate pretty much each one of these proverbs. And two, so many of the proverbs illustrate our own lives, for better or for worse. Here we find a proverb that I find no better illustration of than the parable, the story that Jesus, one of the parables, actual story, that Jesus told of the rich man and Lazarus. And how that the rich man, you know, he lived his whole life in luxury and affluence. But when he died, his money couldn't buy his way out of hell. He found himself in the flames and in torment. Whereas Lazarus, on the other hand, was a beggar in this life, and yet because he was a righteous man, he was able to enjoy the blessings of paradise. You see, on the other side, in the life hereafter, righteousness is much more valuable than riches. Money won't buy very much, but the righteousness of Christ will buy you great blessing, eternal life. The righteousness of the blameless will direct his way aright, but the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright will deliver them, but the unfaithful will be taken by their own lust. One of the most moving confessions that I have ever heard fell from the pen of Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde was an Irish playwright. He had a brilliant mind. He was a skillful writer. He had a powerful wit. Wrote many comedies. He was a man who won academic and literary honors. He had a charming personality. He had everything going for him. Except Oscar Wilde was a man who was controlled by unbridled lust. He had turned to the debased things for pleasure, the perverted things, the sensual things of life. And it drug him down and eventually destroyed his life, and he ended up in prison because of his perversions. Oscar Wilde writes from prison, and listen closely to his words. I had almost everything, but I let myself be lured into long spells of senseless and sensual ease. Tired of being on the heights, I deliberately went to the depths in search of new sensation. What the paradox was to me in the sphere of thought, perversity became to me in the sphere of passion. I grew careless of the lies of others. I took pleasure where it pleased me and passed on. I forgot that every little action of the common day makes or unmakes character, and that therefore what one has done in the secret chamber, one has someday to cry aloud from the housetop. I ceased to be lord over myself. I was no longer the captain of my soul and did not know it. I allowed pleasure to dominate me. I ended in horrible disgrace. This is what the proverb describes. The unfaithful will be taken by their own lust. When a wicked man dies, his expectation will perish, and the hope of the unjust perishes. The righteous is delivered from trouble, and it comes to the wicked instead. The hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous will be delivered. When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices, and when the wicked perish, there is shouting. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. King Herod, the vicious king that had the babes of Bethlehem slaughtered, tried to bypass this proverb. And he hired 200 men who would mourn him on the day that he died. He was so afraid that everyone would rejoice and nobody would be there to mourn him that he hired them in advance to go and mourn him. I mean, when the wicked man dies, people rejoice. You know, when the wise man dies, they mourn. He who is devoid of wisdom despises his neighbor, but a man of understanding holds his peace. A talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. A talebearer is literally a blabbermouth, a tattletale, someone who is always talking about other people. Not necessarily spreading lies and gossip, but sometimes spreading truth that's really just none of his business. Heard somebody say one time that inferior minds talk about people. Mediocre minds talk about things. Great minds talk about ideas. How much time do you spend talking about other people? If that's all you talk about, it means you have an inferior mind. careful when you sit and you talk with someone, with another person about someone else. For it's true, if a person will talk to you about someone else, they'll talk to someone else about you. So you better be careful. He says, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Now, it's a wise man who seeks out counsel, who goes to godly people and asks them what they think about the decision that they're faced with. You need to seek out counsel. There's safety in a multitude of counselors. You see, we can develop blind spots, areas of our lives that we are no longer seeing correctly. And by going to someone who knows us and who's a godly person, they can shine a new light and uncover something about ourselves that maybe we haven't seen before. And yet, on the other hand, don't go to the counselors expecting them to make the decision for you. Because counsel is just that, it's counsel. Don't expect someone else to make a decision for you. You need to make your decision. God holds you responsible for your life. The decision is yours. And if your counselor is wise at all, he won't make the decision for you. She'll give you good counsel, but she won't decide for you. I like what Larry Burkett says. A wise man seeks much counsel. A fool listens to it all. He who is surety for a stranger will suffer for it. In other words, you co-sign a note, you're setting yourself up for trouble. But one who hates being surety is secure. A gracious woman retains honor. Now, they say that everyone has a price. Do they really? The gracious woman retains her honor. She doesn't sell out for any price. The merciful man does good for his own soul. But he who is cruel troubles his own flesh. The wicked man does deceptive work, but to him who sows righteousness will be a sure reward. As righteousness leads to life, so he who pursues evil pursues it to his own death. Those who are of a perverse heart are an abomination to the Lord, but such as are blameless in their ways are his delight. Though they join forces, the wicked will not go unpunished, but the posterity of the righteous will be delivered. As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. What a vivid picture. Now you see, in Oriental cultures, the nose ring was a piece of jewelry. I saw some people the other day wearing rings in their nose. I thought it was weird. But in Oriental cultures, you know, it's a piece of fine jewelry. I mean, it's a common thing to wear the nose ring. It's like you'd put one in your ear. And what he's drawing here is a picture that is totally incompatible. You've got a piece of fine jewelry in the snout of a pig. What are you doing with a thing of beauty against a backdrop of ugliness? And that's how he envisions the beautiful woman. It's an incompatible picture to have a woman that's so beautiful, and yet she's so dumb and stupid. She pursues her own desires rather than seeking God and seeking the ways of God. I mean, she's so foolish, and yet she's so beautiful. It's an incompatible picture. In other words, what he's saying to us is that don't judge a book by its cover. Beauty is only skin deep. And those of you that are single, make sure that you put a person's looks way down on your list of priorities. There are other things that are much more important. So the desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. There is one who scatters yet increases more, and there is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty. You remember what Jesus said? Give and it will be given unto you. That's strange. You think by giving you'd dry up, you'd throw it all away. But no, if you give, to others, it will be given unto you. Jesus said, the man who tries to hold on to his life will lose it. But the man who gives up his life will save it. Remember what we're told in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. He who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. You give a little, you get a little. But he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. You get by giving. The more you give, the more you're willing to share. The more you give to God, the more He gives to you. He says, a generous soul will be made rich. And he who waters will also be watered himself. The people will curse him who withholds grain. But blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. I heard of a wealthy man who had all the signs of affluence. He owned his own company. One day he was approached by a charity asking him for a gift of $50,000. He turned to the man and he said, sir, there's some things that you really don't know about me. First of all, you don't know that my mom is in a nursing home and I'm having to support her. The man said, no, you're right. I didn't really know that. He said, you also don't know that I have a brother who recently died with very little life insurance. And he left his family of five with no support. And I'm trying to help them out. He says, no, I really didn't know that. He says, and you didn't know that my son is deeply religious and he's taken up social work. And he's trying to provide for his family, you know, living, you know, at poverty level. And they said, no, I didn't really know that. The man turned to him and said, well, if I don't give a penny to them, what makes you think I'll give a penny to you? That fits the proverb. The people will curse him who withholds grain. You see, when you have it and you don't give it, you miss out on God's blessing. You miss out on the joy of giving, and you miss out on the people's love and praise. You know, the tightwad is never loved and appreciated. He who diligently seeks good finds favor, but trouble will come to him who seeks evil. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. He who troubles his own house will inherit the wind, and the fool will be servant to the wise of heart. Notice that. He who troubles his own house. Your father. Your husband. You drink too much. You take your paycheck and you spend it on yourself and your own pleasures. You're never home. You don't spend time with your wife and your kids. You're troubling your own house. And friend, you're going to reap the whirlwind. You're a mother, and you're off pursuing your career to the neglect of your family. You are not sensitive to your husband's needs. Listen, you're troubling your own house, and you're going to reap the whirlwind. He says, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he who wins souls is wise. The chief calling of any Christian is to win souls for Jesus Christ. We are called to be a light, to shine forth the love of God, and to share the good news of Jesus Christ with the people around us. Jesus said, go into all the world and preach and teach the gospel. All the world means your neighborhood, your job, your school, your office. Let others know what Christ has done for you. Share the good news of Jesus Christ. The wise man wins souls. And yet it's sad, too many Christians are like the Arctic River, frozen over at the mouth. We need to be wise. We need to try to share the good news of Christ. I heard of two surgeons that were talking about a surgery that they had done. And one was asked, hey, how many times have you performed this surgery? And he said, well, about 16. And he turned and he said, well, how many times have you performed this surgery? And he said, 164. I said, wow. I said, well, of the 16, how many patients were you able to save? He said, well, I was able to save about 13 of the 16. I said, oh. He said, well, of the 164, how many were you able to save? He said, none, but each surgery was brilliantly performed. You see, we forget that the reason we teach Bible studies, the reason we sing songs, the reason we're being a witness, is not just so we can be brilliant at it, but so that we can reach people for Jesus Christ. You musicians, you come and you tinker with that song and you work on it, you work on it, you work on it. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Is it so you'll sound good? Is it so you'll impress the flock? Or is your motivation to reach people for Jesus Christ? Why do I preach a sermon? Is it so that I can walk away and feel like I've preached a brilliant sermon? So what if it's a brilliant sermon? Who cares about brilliant sermons if it doesn't communicate? If it doesn't get the message out? If it doesn't win souls for Jesus Christ? You're out witnessing to people just so you can see how many tracts you can pass out. Or you're out witnessing to people because it makes you feel good that you're doing your thing for Christ. You got little notches in your belt. But is anyone getting saved? You know, are you doing it to win souls? That's the purpose. That's the ball of wax. That's what we're after. The wise man wins souls for Christ. If the righteous will be recompensed on the earth, how much more the wicked and the sinner? Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. A good man obtains favor from the Lord, but a man of wicked devices he will condemn. A man is not established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous cannot be moved. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband. But she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. Now it is a joy to have an excellent wife. I know, I can speak from experience. I have an excellent wife. And it is such a joy to be married to a woman who loves God with all her heart, who wants to see God glorified no matter what, who's willing to make sacrifices for the cause of Christ, who's willing to share her husband with others so that he can serve the Lord. Man, that's an excellent wife, and I've got one, and it is such a joy. And yet, on the other hand, it is such a shame and an irritation to have a wife who thinks only of herself, who has to be pampered all the time and catered to, and who's only concerned about herself. I know many a man who could have had a powerful ministry for God if it had not been for his wife, who was jealous of his devotion to the Lord, who was always getting in the way of him and his service to God. And I know many a man who could be powerful for God if it were not for his wife. His wife is like a rottenness to his bones. Ladies, let me just suggest to you that you be an excellent wife. That if your husband loves the Lord and wants to serve Him, that you get behind that and you support him and that you encourage him. And never find yourself between God and your husband. That's a bad place to be. He says, the thoughts of the righteous are right. One more thing. You remember there was one thing that Satan never took away from Job. Took away his health, took away his prosperity, took away his children, took away his possessions, took away his riches. One thing Satan left him with, remember what it was? His wife. His goal was to torment Job. And apparently Satan's greatest tool was his wife. Enough said. The thoughts of the righteous are right, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. The words of the wicked are, lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright will deliver them. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. A man will be commended according to his wisdom, but he who is of a perverse heart will be despised. Better is the one who is slighted but has a servant than he who honors himself but lacks bread. In other words, the most successful people are some of the most successful people are the people who never receive the spotlight. There are many unsung heroes in our society. You know, I saw a cartoon the other day that had three men. First was Wilt Chamberlain. It's got a little sign that says, "I betted 20,000 women." And then Magic Johnson. "Well, I accommodated all these women and now I'm HIV positive." And then another picture of a firefighter. Said, "I'm married and I have two children and I work for a living. And I have a job on the side to support my family." And at the top it said, "Which one is the appropriate role model?" You see, we have all these heroes that really shouldn't be heroes at all. I mean, the fact that you can put a basketball through a hoop, big deal. What criteria does that make for being a hero? Being a hero is the guy who can carve out a living for his family, who can serve God, who's upright and a person of integrity. Those are the heroes. And there are many unsung heroes in our society that you never read about in the newspaper, you'll never see on TV. But the point of this proverb is it's better to prosper than to be popular. It's better to be successful than to be seen. And so what if you never get the limelight if you're living for the Lord? That's what counts. He says, a righteous man regards the life of his animal. Now that should sit well with some of you animal lovers. The righteous man regards the life of his animal. His dog, his cat, his horse, whatever. And I heard an interesting story of a missionary who had gone to South Africa and was preaching the gospel and had labored there for months and months and months and had never seen the first result. Until one day, a man called for him to come and to pray for his sick horse. And the missionary went and laid hands on the horse and prayed for the horse, and the horse was healed. And it set off a revival, you know, throughout the land, and it was all because someone regarded the life of his animal. The Lord works in mysterious ways. I've been laying hands on my cat to try to get the opposite result. Thing's got nine lives. But the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. I guess that applies to me. He who tills his land, let's move on. He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread. But he who follows frivolity, is that right, Jill? Frivolity? Good. Is devoid of understanding. The wicked covet the catch of evil men. But the root of the righteous yields fruit. The wicked is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will come through trouble. Again, he speaks of our lips, our tongue. Better to stay quiet and have people wonder what you're thinking than to open your mouth and have people wonder why you spoke. Heard about the woman who was sent by her doctor to get her jaw x-rayed. She came back with a motion picture. Moving on. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. said, he who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness, deceit. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. The tongue is a sharp knife. If you've ever been stabbed by one, you know. A lot of times you heal faster from the wound of a knife than you do from the wound of a tongue. Tongue is the only knife that gets sharper the more you use it. Be careful. It's a dangerous thing. It's a poison, James says. The tongue. You know, the Bible speaks more about the abuse of the tongue than it does about the abuse of alcohol. And yet the church is quicker to discipline someone who abuses alcohol than it is someone who abuses the tongue. When's the last time you heard of anyone being disciplined in the church because they had a loose tongue? Now, the tongue is a deceitful thing. The tongue can cause great damage, can split a church, can cause tremendous harm. Be careful how you use your tongue. It's kind of sad. It takes 2 years for a child to learn how to talk. It takes our whole lives to learn how to shut up. We need to get control of our tongue. It says, the truthful lip shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy. No grave trouble will overtake the righteous, but the wicked shall be filled with evil. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are His delight. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the slothful, the lazy, will be put to forced labor. Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. How powerful are a timely word, a glad word spoken at the right time, how it can lift a person's countenance, how it can motivate and influence. Many a man has remarked how that one word from someone they respected, you know, changed their lives. Job chapter 6, verse 25 says, how forceful are right words. Right words are powerful. Words can make us or break us. The words you speak to your child, parents, are very powerful. Don't speak flippantly. Don't say things that you'll regret later. Words, you know the old saying, sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never harm you. That's not true. Words can be much more lethal than sticks and stones. Be careful. He says, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. All the Philistines combined could never have taken Samson had it not been for Delilah. And you see, the reason we should choose our friends carefully is that with friends, we become more vulnerable. Friendships are relaxed relationships. As Samson found out, when we're in a friendship, we let our hair down. And you know, we just relax with our friends and we become receptive to their influence and to their attitudes and to their values. And so if you hang out with the wrong crowd, before you know it, you become just like them. You haven't intended to, but that's what's happened. So we need to choose our friends wisely, not people that will drag us down, but people that will help strengthen our faith. People that will help us keep our focus on Jesus Christ and the things that matter. He says, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. The slothful man does not roast what he took in hunting, but diligence is man's precious possession. Very humorous proverb. You know, this guy's so lazy, he goes out and hunts, but he's too lazy to skin what he shoots. But the guy goes fishing, and he's too lazy to clean the fish and eat them. I mean, that's pretty lazy. And the way of righteousness is life, and its pathway there is no death. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. A man shall eat well by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the unfaithful feeds on violence. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. The soul of a sluggard desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. It was Thomas Edison who said, "I am wondering what would have happened to me if some fluent talker had converted me to the theory of the 8-hour day and convinced me it was not fair to my fellow workers to put forth my best efforts in my work. I'm glad that the 8-hour day had not been invented when I was a young man. If my life had been made up of 8-hour days, I do not believe I could have accomplished a great deal. This country would not amount to as much as it does, or it did, if the young men had been afraid that they might earn more than they were paid." That's the problem with our society today. Everybody's afraid they might earn more than they're paid, rather than doing their work as unto the Lord, striving for excellence in their work, being diligent. We've lost the work ethic. When we threw God out of the schools, when we threw God out of society, we threw everything that comes with God. And one of it is the motivation to work and to do excellent. People work today, but they don't work for any transcendent value. They work so that they can get the money, so they can go do their thing on the weekend, and so that they can go here and go there and snort this and drink that. And that's why they work. And they're out for themselves, to make as much money as they can. And that's why we have all these scandals and this insider trading and all the rest of it. Because people are not working for the right reasons. People are not working to start off with. And those that aren't working for the right reasons. To glorify God. And to do all that we can as an act of worship to Him. A righteous man hates lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and comes to shame. Righteousness keeps him whose way is blameless, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. There is one who makes himself rich, yet has nothing. Now, who in the world could this man be? He's the man who is pursuing spiritual riches. He is the man who is laying up for himself treasure in heaven. He is the man that may have little on earth, but he's loaded in heaven. He's the man who, on one hand, appears as if he is making himself poor. You know, it looks like he's trying to really have nothing. I mean, he rather than taking that new job that's going to send him out of town, he decides to turn it down so he can spend more time with his family and his friends, his people at church, his commitments to God. Rather than going off and getting that sale, he turns it down because it would require him cheating and giving this kickback. And he's a man that on the one hand looks as if he's trying to make himself poor. On the one hand, he says, man, he has nothing. But in reality, he's rich because he's been living his life for God. But then he says, and there is one who makes himself poor, yet he has great riches. I got him mixed up. That's the man that I just described. The man who makes himself poor, who looks as if he's throwing things away, and yet he's really laying up great riches. The previous man that we read about, the one who makes himself rich, yet has nothing. It's becoming clearer the more I try to explain this, isn't it? The man who makes himself rich, yet has nothing. I mean, this is the man who whose ego is bigger than his wallet, who is overextending himself, who likes these little status symbols that shows that he's a success. It's the young couple that rather than being smart and buying something they can afford, stretch themselves to the limit to buy this big house rather than settling for that starter home. It's the guy who deserves that classy ride. So he goes out and he buys that expensive car. He's the guy that on the one hand seems to be making himself rich. You know, accumulating all these acquisitions. But in reality, he has nothing. He's rich for a moment. But in reality, he has nothing. And one day, it's going to be apparent. I think I got that straight now. He says, the ransom of a man's life is his riches. See, oftentimes, rich men were kidnapped. They were held for ransom. And it's interesting that a rich man that was being held for ransom, he got a whole new perspective on what riches really were. Because what became riches at that moment was the ransom price. Whatever the extortioners were asking, that's what, in his mind, was riches. That's what he needed. Everything else was irrelevant. It was the ransom price that was important. And you see, we have been ransomed from the clutches of sin through the blood of Jesus Christ. And for the man who knows the ransom, the man who's received Christ into his life, his riches have become Christ. And everything else has become irrelevant or important only as it relates to Christ. He says, but the poor does not hear rebuke. The light of the righteous rejoices. But the lamp of the wicked will be put out. By pride comes only contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished, but he who gathers by labor will increase. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. Remember that when you make a promise to your child. You know how children are. Man, you make a promise and they, oh yeah. And they start thinking about it and they get excited about it and they're dreaming about it at night and they're waking up, Daddy, 3 more days till we go to the circus. And then you come in at the last minute and say, sorry, darling, something else has come up. I can't take you. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. Crushes the spirit of a child. Be careful that when you make a promise to your child, you keep it. But when the desire comes, it is a tree of life. He who despises the word will be destroyed. But he who fears the commandment will be rewarded. The law of the wise is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares of death. Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard. How true. Listen, sin is a cruel taskmaster. And God designed life to be lived with Him. So when you rebel against God and do things your own way, you're choosing the hard way. Life can become hard, difficult, drudgery. Jesus said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He says, every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool lays open his folly. A wicked messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful ambassador brings health. Poverty and shame will come to him who disdains correction, but he who regards reproof will be honored. A desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to fools to depart from evil. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. This is why it's so important to choose your friends wisely. Because you become like the people you hang out with. Your friends rub off on you. You know, the man who walks with the wise men will be wise. A man who walks with fools will be foolish. It says, evil pursues sinners, but to the righteous good shall be repaid. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. You know, a good man leaves an inheritance. He's not only concerned about his family's immediate needs, but he's concerned about their future as well. And the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. This is another proverb that becomes prophetic. And when Christ returns and establishes his kingdom, the rewards of the wicked will be confiscated. The wicked won't be around anymore, so we'll be able to take over. And so all that the wicked stored up is going to be ours anyway, so don't sweat it when you see the wicked prospering. And we say, Jesus, thank Him. Say, hey, I'm glad you're making all this money because it's going to be mine one day when Jesus comes back. And I appreciate it. And. Much food is in the fallow ground of the poor. And for lack of justice, there is waste. I'm not even going to. 24. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Or the word literally is early in life. Wait until a kid's 14 or 15 years old before you start to discipline him, and you've waited too late. They say the best time to tackle a minor problem is before he grows up. Get to him early. I read one study that said by the time a child is 5 years of age, the parents have already done over 50% of all they'll be able to do to shape and mold that child's life. You've all seen it, where a child is born with no accent. You can take a Chinese baby and put him in your family, and he will grow up with a southern accent. You know, a child is born without an accent. The phenomena is called the phoneme contraction. In other words, when the child is born, the larynx is very soft and very pliable. But what happens is over the years, the larynx begins to harden around the sounds that it's used to making. So that once the child has grown up, it's very difficult for that child to speak with a different accent. Sort of stuck with the accent of his parents. He may learn another language, but he can't duplicate, has a hard time mimicking the accent. That's also true in other areas of the child's life. In the early years, he's soft, he's pliable, he can be molded and shaped. But if you allow habits to develop, it becomes more difficult for him to learn wise behavior and develop the skills that he needs to make good decisions. So make sure that you take care of your child early in life. Begin to discipline him. The old saying, children are wet cement. They harden quickly. Be careful of the impressions that you plant. One heard person observed one time, there are three ways to get something done. Do it yourself, employ someone, or forbid your children to do it. You see, children are born with a sin nature. They're born with a rebellious streak. They want to go their own way and do their own thing. They want to push the limits and see how far they can go. And it is up to you to set your standards and then enforce those standards when they're defied. And here we're told that you need to use the rod. Don't be afraid to spank your kids. We need less Spock and more spank. The Lord endorses the board. We need to apply the board of education to the seat of learning. Children need to be spanked. They need to be shown that there are certain actions that produce painful consequences. And if those painful consequences are not immediately apparent, you need to supply some manufactured misery, some simulated suffering, to get the point over to them that their actions have consequences and those consequences are harmful. From this we get the saying, spare the rod and spoil the child. And how true. Now never spank your child in anger. Get a grip on yourself before you get a grip on them. Also notice he says use the rod. Use a neutral object. Don't just do it with the hand. We have actually it's a chopping board if you want to know the truth. And we go down and get it. And a lot of times we can just, you know, we'll leave and just set the chopping board in the hall, you know, where they can see it. And man, it's just like us being there. I mean, because somehow the kid doesn't associate the pain with you. They associate the pain with the chopping board and with the lesson you're trying to teach them. He always uses rod. Never says hit them with your hands. Just use the rod. Also, always hit them where God gave them the padding. Never hit them anywhere else. God didn't give them padding anywhere. He gave them padding right back here. That's where you're supposed to apply the Board of Education to the seat of learning. Never lose your temper. Never discipline them. Before you get a grip on your own emotions, give them an explanation. It's unfair to discipline a child without explaining why they're being disciplined. Also, make sure that you're disciplining them for the right reasons. You only spank a child for deliberate disobedience, defiance. You never spank a child because they had an accident or spilt their milk or did something that a child's supposed to do. It's just being a child. It's not being defiant. But when you set a standard and they push you and they step over that standard, you've got to enforce it. And the best way is to spank them. He says, the righteous eats to the satisfying of his soul, but the stomach of the wicked shall be in want. And we better stop there.